OTC is go.
Thank you, this is go.
ETC is go.
Copy, this is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
STE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It's Friday night, 19th of April. Welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you?
Oh, I'm well rested. How about you?
No, I'm tired. I'm tired of spending a whole day updating my Monday article because things are changing in the Middle East by the minute, and I am just tired. Let BB just get rid of Iran and be done with it.
You know, folks, last Tuesday, on Tuesday on the show, we told you that both of us are working on Israel pieces for next week, for next Tuesday. And we knew as we were writing these early in the week that there was a good chance that we were going to have to do some last minute updating. So last night, I was watching TV and I got up and I went, got some water. And on my way back, I stopped and played with the cat because the cat was sitting on a big pillow on the couch. Stopped and played with the cat for a few minutes. And then I went back to the TV and I thought, I'll watch Gutfeld, Well, Gutfeld wasn't on because Israel was in the middle of an operation against Iran. So naturally I had to call Diane right away and, like the bearer of good news, like the ray of sunshine that I am, I told her what was going on. And she, she was doing the same thing I was earlier. She was watching something other than news.
Star Trek.
Yeah. Because, we gotta clear our minds somehow.
Yes.
Right. And so yes. I told her, and so she switched over. And of course, right away, it's like, we're going to have to update our articles tomorrow. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. You were lucky. You didn't have as many updates because you're really keying in on one important thing that happened.
Right.
Mine is a little more broad, so I'm stuck.
Yeah.
I had to pull the whole thing apart today and rework it, and I'm tired.
this doesn't happen very often where we're doing something that is so time sensitive and so fluid that we have to keep changing things.
Right.
Between writing it and, a few days later when we publish it. But when it happens, there's really nothing we can do. We have to go in and do the updates and, try to make it as current as possible because we publish on Monday and then we do the articles and talk about them here on the show on Tuesday. So, this is one of those times where things are fluid. Now, last night, what was going on? Nobody was sure in the early minutes what exactly was happening. We knew that an operation was in the process. Israel was retaliating against Iran in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And, updates were being given. We were getting information from other sources as well. And once again, I got to say, Trey Yingst from Fox News, who is over in Israel, is probably the best on-the-spot reporter I've seen in a long time.
Absolutely. He's more like a war correspondent than just a regular reporter.
He's got contacts galore, and mm-hmm. he's on top of it. He knows the region. He understands the situation. He knows all the key players and who they are and what they're liable to do. So he can give insight like nobody's business. And
yes,
I appreciate his reporting in that situation, because I think he's better in that situation than anybody else that I've seen in a long time. But even his reports were a little fluid, because while he was giving one report, his phone alerted and sirens were sounding in northern Israel. He was right. in southern Israel, but he was right. able to convey that. There were explosions supposedly being reported in Iran, and mm-hmm. we were able to narrow down the area where this was taking place. But typically of Israel, they have really said nothing today.
No. And that's the way it should be, because Bibi has learned you really can't trust anyone, especially here right now, as in Biden and crew.
Right.
They're not on Israel's side, really. And he's got to keep everything under the hat. But I did learn something today, how the decision on exactly what happened last night was done. Apparently, Bibi met with his war
cabinet.
War cabinet, right. They call it something else, but war cabinet. And it's an odd number of people, so they can always have an majority. Well, for the Bibi, from what I'm hearing, wanted to go even harder than they did. But the war cabinet, you know, and he's a member of it, it was decided on what they did last night. Now, in a way, that actually was better because, and I get into this in my article, but because it shows you don't necessarily have to level everything to make your point.
That's true.
You have to think of exactly where Bibi sent the unmanned missile into. And where it was, you know, we're told one thing on the radio, oh, it was a military base and this and that. Yes, there was a military base there. And very close by was Iran's chief nuclear facility.
Right. Right.
So this way it's sent to Iran, to the mullahs. We know where your stuff is. You better stop your nonsense, because you can't beat our capabilities.
And here's something else that I learned today about the whole thing. Yesterday, apparently, Israel and the White House were in negotiations, and the White House was willing to sign off. I'm going to get into this in a minute. They were willing to sign off on allowing Israel yes. to engage in the operation in Rafah, okay, if Israel did not retaliate against Iran. Now,
it's
yeah,
kind of funny.
I had the same reaction. Okay, I really did. I laughed because I thought Bibi doesn't need the White House to okay anything. And, right. you know, Rafah is going to happen.
Yes, it
and,
is.
And, you know, apparently Bibi said, well, guess what? Rafah is going to happen and we're going to retaliate. So, you know, White House, you can take your, you know, we'll let you do this if you don't do that and stick it where the sun don't shine.
And first of all, who is the White House, or even our country for that matter? Who are we to tell a sovereign country what they can and cannot do?
Well, that's just it. You know, those days are long gone.
Exactly.
And, you know, that all ended. You know, now there's a lot of people that are going to say, well, that ended on October 7th. Mm-hmm. Okay, and technically that's true, but I guarantee you it really came to an end the day Biden set his butt in the Oval Office, because from that point on, nothing he has to say makes any difference.
Right. Nobody's listening to him. Nobody cares what he has to say. He needs to just shut his mouth. His wife needs to take him by the hand, and they should both go off to some home somewhere.
They're a nice cream parlor.
Seriously, because he's a danger. Joe Biden is a danger to world security.
Right. I mean, on the world stage, nobody's paying a lick of attention to him, and rightfully right. so.
Exactly. You know,
it's sad because the U.S. used to have command of the world stage,
mm-hmm.
you know, but without that command of the world stage, the world is a more dangerous place.
Exactly.
And we're seeing that play out minute by minute in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting.
And what's sad about that is the Middle East is the most volatile place right now. I'm so tired, folks. Place right now, and it's ridiculous.
Now, not only has Israel not said anything about what happened last night, what they did, Iran hasn't said anything either. Iran has been very quiet about it. The Ayatollah president, whatever you want to call him over there, he gave a speech today and never mentioned it. Okay, that's interesting. Even more interesting, none of the Arab partners, none of the Abraham Accord partners have said boo diddly about it.
No, because they know Iran can't save face in this. Late last night when I was watching it super late, Iran was denying that any rockets made it, that their security system knocked them down. Well, apparently that's not true. They will not even admit the truth of what happened. They are afraid to admit Israel knows where our key facilities are, Israel can reach us, and Israel is better equipped than us if a nuclear war was ever going to break out.
I think it may even go deeper than that, to be perfectly honest with you. Iran can't say anything in part, and I think maybe in large part, because they issued that threat to Israel, you know, you will cease to exist if you retaliate.
Right.
Well, Israel retaliated. If Iran admits to their own people that they retaliated, Iran loses face with its own people.
Well, the people, and that's a big part of my article on Monday, guys. Their own people have just about had it.
You? I mean, given everything they've been through since 1979, wouldn't you be about up to here with it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's, these people need to come out of the 6th century, 7th century, whatever, and start acting like modern-day people. Their nonsense is repressive, insulting, denigrated, and pure out dirty pigs, the way these Ayatollahs want the Iranian people to live. The Iranian people remember what it was like under the Shah.
Well, the Shah,
and the majority of them want that back.
You know, the Shah wasn't all sunshine and lollipops.
No, of course not.
But Iran was a very Western metropolitan area. I mean, it yes. was, they had freedoms, so to speak. I mean, within limits, but a lot more than they have now. And they were able to live in a Western style. Nobody had to dress in a certain way.
Right.
You know, I mean,
women went to college and school. Yes.
Everybody got to be educated.
Right.
You know, education to these Islamist regimes is an anathema to holding power. They can't hold power if people are educated and understand what they're missing.
Exactly. They can't.
You know,
and it's really getting to the young people because they know what's outside there.
Yeah, I mean,
and that, they want it.
Back in 79, there was no social media. There was no computers. If the regime in charge of you cut off communications, you were in the dark. You're just in the dark. But now, the way things are today, people know what's going on outside. Mm-hmm. And you're right, they want it. But if Iran now says, well, Israel hit back, they're admitting that their threat was ignored and that they're not the power that they portray themselves as. Because they told people in Iran, in essence, we have threatened Israel and they will not retaliate because they know we are more powerful than they.
Oh, yeah. 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 They're more powerful. You know,
propaganda.
Everybody needs to stop kidding themselves about certain things, especially about their nuclear program. I personally believe they already have a bomb, maybe one or two at the most. And what they can't get, in case people don't know, Russia, Putin, has stabbed Israel in the back, who Russia and Israel had a pretty good relationship, changing medical information. A lot of escaped Russian Jews live in Israel, and they were allowed to go back and forth. He is supporting the Ayatollahs and the mullahs and all those nonsense. And he would even arm them if need be.
Well, and don't leave China out of the mix because they're in the same boat. You know, they're supporting them. But that all comes down to cheap oil, too. I mean, Russia and China are getting cheap oil out of Iran, and Iran's getting rich on it.
Well, the thing is, all Israel has to do, shut down their oil fields. They are all... And this is also, I will speak about this on Tuesday, their oil fields are literally, except for one, which is kind of near Tehran, but every other one is on their, I guess that would be their western coast.
Yeah.
So it would be easy to target it and take them all out. And you get a two for that. Not only do you deprive them of selling their goods to China and Russia, but you cut off all their funding. They won't be bringing any money in, and hence they can't support terrorists.
It would make it very, very hard because we know for a fact Biden will never shut down the moneymaker for Iran.
No.
He doesn't have the cojones to do it. And Biden's not, he's not given the orders. He's just dancing on the end of puppet strings. So,
right. So it's quite interesting what's happening in Israel, but it's also quite scary because let's say Iran does have a nuclear bomb. All it takes is one to cause massive damage. Because Israel is so small. It's the size of New Jersey, folks. So it's a very small country. You drop a certain type of nuke there, maybe a plutonium-based one, right dead center, you would do a lot of damage.
Yeah, and that's very true. Of course, Iran has to worry about prevailing winds. And Diane, I know, I think it's probably been a good couple of years ago now, you did an article about that. Mm-hmm. One of the op-eds in the Patriot Factor .blogspot.com. And I think if people go and look, you know, scroll through all your op-eds in the op-ed section, they could probably find it. I can't remember the title of it. But, you know, there are those worries. But does Iran really care if they somehow irradiate some of their own people in the process? I think probably not.
No, they died for the cause.
Yeah, I mean, whether they want to or not.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's how it would be portrayed.
Yes.
And, you know, but, you know, God help them if they pull a stunt like that, because that'll be the end of Iran.
Yeah. And the problem is also the West. Now, certain countries are standing strong with Israel. Yeah, Obama says he is, but he's not. I mean, just his actions show that he's not.
Obama or O'Biden?
O'Biden.
Okay.
O'Biden. You know Biden's not running anything. It's Obama 100%.
Right.
He's clamoring for his, you know, fourth term in office here. But the surprising one that I think is going to aid Israel more than we suspect is Saudi Arabia, because it took a lot of guts for them to join the United States, our military. I'm not even going to say the United States. I'm going to say our military and Britain and France to shoot down those drones.
Yeah, that really says a lot.
Yes.
You know, and that's why we said on Tuesday on the show, things are changing in Saudi Arabia, maybe not as fast as we want them to. They've still got human rights, women's rights issues, and things that need to come into the 21st century. I think eventually they'll get there on those. But, you know, there was a time not very far back where they would have been solidly against Israel. They don't like Iran, but there was a time not very long ago where they would not have raised a finger to help Israel.
Right. That's true. That's,
you know,
true.
So the fact that they did what they did last weekend, that's a huge step in the right direction. They understand that stability in the Middle East begins with Israel, not with Iran.
Right.
And they know that the more stable the Middle East is, you know, it's kind of like putting more water into the lake. It raises every boat. If the Middle East becomes more stable, both politically and economically, everybody in the region does better.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're smart enough to know that. In Saudi Arabia and some of these other countries that have also signed on to the Abraham Accords, they're looking at this and they're seeing the reality of the situation after all these years. And they're saying, yeah, you know, it makes more sense to be with Israel than to be against them. We'll do better. The region will do better. The world will be more peaceful. You know, they've started to come around and understand the facts on the ground.
Yeah, and not only that, Saudi Arabia, right before October 7th and all hell broke loose, they were ready to officially recognize Israel. And that's thanks to, they now have a more modern monarchy there than there was, let's say, 30, 40 years ago. It's a younger monarchy, so they're not like embedded in those old hatreds and old ways.
Yeah, now don't get to thinking, though, that all of Saudi Arabia has changed. It hasn't.
No, it hasn't.
The royal family is kind of split. There's the old guard and the new guard. The new guard sees what leads to the best possible future, and that's the Abraham Accords. That's being aligned with Israel. That's being against the repressive regimes like Iran. The old guard, you know, the old ways die hard. you know, and they're still trying to cling to that. But I think if you look at the situation, I think the new Saudi Arabia is going to replace the old guard.
Oh, I think so, too. The just logistics of how old, literally, the old guard are. They're going to be dying off soon.
Yeah, and, you know, the old ways and the old allegiances are not the best way forward for the entirety of Saudi Arabia. They're just not. And the young guns, so to speak, in Saudi Arabia understand that. You know, Saudi Arabia is a very rich country. They've gotten that way on oil, OPEC, and the whole thing. But it could be even better. And to be able to share scientific and medical knowledge and boost each other's economies, they know overall, in the long run, Saudi Arabia will be better off not to be against Israel.
Right. These countries, they need the knowledge of Israel to come into the 21st century. Because for the most part, except for certain sections of Saudi Arabia, some of these countries are decades behind everything.
I mean, they're rich monetarily, but not necessarily technologically.
Right. And they need the advances that Israel has made. Plus, for the fact, Israel, whether some like it or not, is the most nuclear-armed country in the Middle East.
By far.
Way by far.
I mean, it's not even close.
No.
And but let me give our listeners kind of a for instance. There's a lot of times in Saudi Arabia, with all the wealth and all the money they have, if somebody in the royal family gets sick, they either come to the U.S. or they go to Israel for medical treatment because our capabilities and Israel's capabilities in those fields are way ahead of their own.
They're even ahead of our own in certain areas.
It's, well, like cancer research.
Cancer research, and also they have a I'm going to call it a suit for lack of a better word, but a paralyzed person, and I've seen the videos a number of times, they put them in the suit, and people who haven't walked in years, especially, let's say, veterans who were hurt in war, they're walking.
I mean, it's
only
like
with suits. Only with the suits, but they're walking. Their technology is unbelievable.
It's almost like an exoskeleton suit.
Yeah, it is almost like an exoskeleton.
You know, and they can control it. They're working on being able to literally control it with the person's mind, the wearer's mind.
Right.
And it's a remarkable thing.
Right. They also have treatments for melanoma, invasive melanoma. They're working on treatments for glioblastoma, the deadliest, brain cancer you can get. They're very cutting edge and ahead medically in a lot of areas, even more so than we are.
Yeah, and part of it is they don't have all the regulations that we have that hold things back. And at the same time, they're not rushing to accomplish something. They're dotting all the I's, they're crossing all the T's. But they're able to put the money directly into that, and it's not being sucked up by, let's say, big pharma or, big medical tech. They're able to do the R&D faster and more accurately than we can because we got so many fingers in the pie where they don't.
Right, exactly. And I'm just seeing something now about Biden. Iowa Senator Jody Ernst, she said on the Faulkner Factor, Focus, I should say, that Biden has got to step up and he cannot continue to appease Iran, that she is sick of it. And more of our people in Congress need to stand up like that.
I agree. You know, obviously there are those that won't, the squad and at least half the left side of the aisle. And the half on the left that would be willing to are afraid of the squad and the half that won't.
They were afraid of the squad. Let's see. We've got a woman that married her brother. We have one who should just go live in Palestine. We have a bartender. Yeah, that's a real good brain pool there.
I get you. Right. You know.
That's who they're afraid of.
Folks, we've hit the bottom of the hour. That means we have to take a break. We've still got a couple of very interesting things to talk about, including the trial in Trumpville.
Mm-hmm.
So stay with us.
And I have a question I'm going to ask Craig on air.
Okay. Stay with us, folks. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, getting you through the Friday night edition of the show. And if, of course, you miss any part of it, you'll want to go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, and listen all weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that because we've got a lot of shows on there that you can listen to.
Yes.
You can binge listen.
Yeah, and some real interesting articles, especially in the science and technology sections.
Yeah, check them out. Okay, so the Trump trial going on in Manhattan, this is the hush money trial. The jury has been seated, and the trial is set to begin on Monday with opening statements.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, and they have, you know, the jury that's going to try it. And Trump made a last-ditch motion to delay the trial. And guess what?
Yeah.
The liberal just said no, no, no.
Now, it's interesting in the picking of the jury, right? They had a 42-question thing they had to fill out.
Right.
And a lot of that was aimed at finding out, are you on Trump's side, or are you on, the not Trump side? Yeah. I guarantee you, if you answered any of the questions that you like Trump, or, you know, anything in that light, or if you answered anything For instance, they had questions, where do you get your news? And they had a whole bunch of them listed. If you said Fox News or Right Side Patriots or the Patriot Factor, you know, I mean, whatever you said, if it wasn't one of the propaganda liberal networks,
CNN,
you're out.
ABC, yeah.
Yeah, you're out. You're not going to be on mm-hmm. that jury. You know, and this is the way it was, right? If you had any bias towards Trump, in favor of Trump, you're out.
Right.
Now, one of the questions that was asked is, are you politically involved? And if so, with who, right? If you didn't answer that the correct way, and you know what the correct way is, it's, you know, if you're liberal, you're fine. If you're Republican, you're not. The judge himself has donated to Joe Biden.
Right. That should, he should have been recused immediately.
You know, if you are a potential juror and you have donated money to Donald Trump, you're not going to be on that jury, but the judge can donate to Joe Biden. No problem. Right. Nothing to see here. Everybody move along.
Right. This is not a trial. It's a witch hunt. It's an inquisition of sorts. I mean, they have nothing to go on here. In fact, I'm going to ask you a question right now, Craig.
All right.
Let our listeners hear what you're going to say. And he doesn't know what it is. Okay. We all know that this was a trial about Trump paying money to Stormy Daniels for keeping their affair secret so it wouldn't ruin the 2016 election. However, Stormy Daniels issued a written statement that was all over the place that said no affair took place. In other words, she was corroborating what Trump said. It never happened. Okay. Then we've got the amount of cash, check, whatever, the hush money. Yet that check was made out. The affair never happened. And I'm going to believe that the affair never happened because both parties are admitting it never happened. Why was that check cut? Why, where did those monies go and why? It was supposed to be hush money for something that never happened. So here it is, we have a trial that has no victim.
Right.
Why are they even going ahead with this? Seriously, why isn't the Supreme Court stepping in and say, no. This is unconstitutional in its own right. You cannot have a victimless trial.
Well, they just had a victimless trial, right? I mean, the banks that supposedly were defrauded all came forward and say, no, we weren't defrauded. And in fact, we want to do more business with Trump.
Right.
You know, but they had that trial.
Yeah, you know? But that's still ongoing. All of these things that are basically unconstitutional.
Well,
when you have no victim, you have no case. And yet Bragg and that whole group from New York, they're pushing forward on this. Is it George Soros pushing them because he funded a lot of them? Does he want his money's worth?
I'm sure that's part of it. I mean, Alvin Bragg is one of those Soros DAs.
Yes.
You know, and while you were, you know, going through all that, I pulled up the actual letter from Stormy Daniels dated January 30th, 2018, to whom it may concern over the past few weeks. This is from January 30th, 2018.
Right.
Over the past few weeks, I've been asked countless times to comment on reports of an alleged sexual relationship I had with Donald Trump many years ago. The fact of the matter is that each party to this alleged affair denied its existence in 2006, 2011, 2016, 2017, and now again in 2018. I am not denying this affair because I was paid hush money, as has been reported in overseas-owned tabloids. I am denying this affair because it never happened. I will have no further comment on this matter. Please feel free to check me out on Instagram at the Stormy Daniels. Signed, thank you, and her signature, Stormy Daniels. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as to your question, if it never happened, if both sides say it never happened, if she says it never happened, she, not only did she say that in this letter, but she has said as much in interviews over the years. Why is there a trial? It's because he's Trump, okay? And the idea is to get him. The idea is to tie him up in legal red tape.
I understand that.
You know, and you got to remember, folks, this whole thing, if it ever took place at all, if the hush money payment ever took place, this is a bookkeeping error at best. It's a misdemeanor at best.
Wait a minute. A check supposedly was cut with her name on it.
Okay.
Whether, I'm assuming it never went anywhere, but there is on the record a check cut.
Fine.
But what was the check? If she's admitting it never happened, if Trump says it never happened, what was the check written to her for and by whom?
Well, I'll tell you who you asked that question of.
Yeah.
The prosecution's star witness, Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
That's who you asked that question of. And he is already a convicted certified liar and perjurer. So keep that
in mind. I'm wondering if this wasn't Michael Cohen who had the affair and wrote this check or whatever without Trump's knowledge.
You look at Donald Trump and you look at who he's currently married to and who he's been married to in the past. And then you take a good hard look at Stormy Daniels. Okay, and look at Michael Cohen. Which one of those two is more likely to want to have an affair with Stormy Daniels? Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
Okay, but at best, this is a was a misdemeanor. Now, Alvin Bragg, Soros-backed DA, literally shoehorned this into a felony to get around the statute of limitations.
Right.
You can make this a felony if it's done to cover up a separate crime. Mm-hmm. Alvin Bragg, Soros-backed DA, says that's exactly what happened here. But nowhere in the indictment is the second crime listed. And when pressed for, you know, an explanation of the second crime, he sidesteps the issue. He won't say what the crime is that this supposedly covered up.
Well, that's why I'm saying when you have a case being brought against someone, in this particular case, it's Trump. But when you have case after case being lobbed at somebody, you're guilty of this, there are no victims. There's no proof anything happened. The people involved are all denying it. Why doesn't the Supreme Court say, wait a minute, something unconstitutional is going on in regards to this president, to the DAs involved. We need to get involved and at least look into the constitutionality of it.
Well,
and they're doing nothing.
Well, the Supreme Court actually cannot do that. Somebody has to bring a case to them.
Right. Why hasn't Trump and his attorneys petitioned the Supreme Court?
Well, I think they will. I think this will eventually make it all the way to the Supreme Court if the appeals court, because you know as well as I do what the outcome of this trial is going to be. They're going to find him guilty.
He was found guilty the day they brought the charges. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. So this will go to appeal, and depending on what the appeals court does, it'll eventually end up at the Supreme Court level. And there is plenty of things in this that are unconstitutional, not just the way the charges have been levied, but this gag order against President Trump is out of control.
Okay? Totally out of control.
I can understand putting a gag order out there, because you don't want people involved in the trial talking about it outside the courtroom. I get it.
Right.
Okay. Gag orders always kind of run the ragged edge where it comes to the First Amendment, no matter what. They always do. All right.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. I have never heard of a trial where only one side is gagged. Trump is gagged. Trump's people are gagged. They can't say anything. Yet on the other side of this issue, the prosecution's key witness can go on TV and talk about it. Stormy Daniels can go on TV and talk about it. Their attorneys can go on TV and talk about it. They can shoot their mouths off all they want. But Trump or Trump's attorneys, you got to be quiet.
That's why I'm saying the Supreme Court really needs to get involved, because this is outward persecution of an individual when there's no crime per se having been committed. This is a political witch hunt.
There you go. It's 100% political.
Yeah.
You know, so opening statements will take place on Monday.
Right.
That's going to be a Donnybrook. Okay.
Yeah.
We have no idea how long this trial is going to take.
2 months, they say 2 months.
They say 2 months, but they also said it was going to take 2 weeks to pick a jury, and they did that in 5 days.
That's one work week. Okay.
You know, but they said it was going to take 2 weeks to pick a jury. Well, it didn't, because
Did they get the alternates also?
Yep, they got them all. They got 12 for seating and 6 for alternates.
They did. Okay.
Yep. You know, I'll tell you what's going to be the most interesting part of it. If one pro-Trump person managed to wiggle their way through, they could throw a monkey wrench in the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope that happens. Yeah. I really do, because you might not like someone politically, you know, certain actions of theirs.
Right.
But you also have to be smart enough to know when someone is being really persecuted for no damn good reason at all, except that they're not of your party.
Exactly. So one person with common sense, one person that supports Trump, doesn't matter. If somebody like that gets on the jury, they could monkey wrench this entire process for the liberals.
But I wouldn't want to put any money on a bet that there's even anything but liberals on that jury.
That's the problem. Okay, so it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out over the next several weeks.
Mm-hmm.
There's 34 charges, so it will take time. It's not going to be a week in, week out deal. It will take time. There's 34 trumped up, no pun intended, persecution charges, witch hunt charges. So it'll be interesting, you know, and obviously right side patriots will keep an eye on it. You know, it'll become part of Tuesday's show. And next week, you know, we'll have even more, I'm sure, on it, because as we go through the trial, things are going to be coming out. It's going to be a circus.
It's going to be dirty.
Very, very dirty. Yeah. All right. So one last topic that we have to talk about. And let me just say, of course, Joe Biden's uncle was eaten by cannibals.
Yes. They picked him out of everybody to eat him. Boy, that must have gone down real bad.
Probably gave them the runs, and they've never eaten a Biden ancestor since. But
that's true. That's true.
Joe was in Pennsylvania the other day, and he was talking about veterans. And, of course, you know, he has to tell stories about himself, you know, to show how he empathizes with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of like, you know, when an entire city in Hawaii burned to the ground, he talked about how he had a kitchen fire one time.
Oh, God, yeah, I remember that one. Mm-hmm.
So he's in Pennsylvania. He's talking about veterans. And, of course, the topic of him comes up. And he had an uncle, Ambrosius J. Finnegan. And they called him Uncle Brosie. And according to Biden, he was quite an athlete in his youth.
Okay.
But Uncle Brosie was a pilot in World War II. And he was, this is according to Joe, he was piloting a single-engine airplane and got shot down over New Guinea. And they never found the body because, you know, New Guinea, there's a lot of cannibals on New Guinea.
Right.
Okay, so that's the story, right? Joe's uncle got shot down and was eaten by cannibals. Not necessarily the story the Pentagon tells.
Not even close.
According to the Pentagon, who has official records on the situation, he wasn't flying over New Guinea. He flew out of New Guinea.
Yes.
He wasn't the pilot. He was a passenger. The plane was not single engine. It was a twin engine plane. It was not shot down. It developed engine trouble after taking off from a runway in New Guinea and crashed into the ocean.
And the body was never found.
Because the plane sank.
Right. That's
but
it,
naturally,
folks.
Naturally, Joe's uncle was eaten by cannibals.
Fish, maybe, but not cannibals.
Now, I will say this. If Joe were to take a trip to New Guinea, he would not have to worry about being eaten by cannibals himself, as he is a vegetable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this man, I've been watching the past couple of interviews and things he's been at, because it gets me very angry that his supposedly loving wife allows this fiasco to continue. This is a mentally sick man, physically sick man, who has no business running for another term in office.
Right.
He's not mentally there. And he sure as hell isn't physically there.
Now, the contrast between him and Trump right now is so stark. You know, the other day, Trump comes out of the courtroom, takes a little jaunt down to Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
Harlem is not known as a place that a lot of Republicans running for office go.
No.
Trump goes to Harlem unannounced, goes into a bodega, and before he can even get in, there are hundreds of people on the street shouting, "We love Trump," and "four more years," and clamoring to get their picture taken, and he's stopping and talking with them, and, you know, he goes into the bodega, and there's all people all over the bodega wanting pictures and telling him how much they love him, they're going to vote for him. I don't care that these were Hispanic people, black people, white people, people with pink and purple polka dots. These were people who live in Harlem and are supporting Trump, and they were just there. It was a very organic thing. Meanwhile, Joe goes into a Wawa's, which is, I guess, a sandwich shop or something?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, we don't have them out here in my part of the country, but
no, we
you know, it's like a sandwich shop. The Secret Service had closed it down so that the only people in there were the employees. Cameras caught the employees before Joe came in, describing who was going to bring the order out of the kitchen and who was going to do the handoff to Joe. So we know this is all staged.
Of course it is.
Okay. There's nobody on the sidewalk. Joe and one woman, I don't know who she was, they walk into the Wawa's. And Joe has money in his hand. Mm-hmm. And they hand, you know, "Here, sir, is your order." And he says, "Well, here's a tip for you," and hands him the folded up money. That tells me that before they allowed Joe to go inside, they put money in his hand and said, "When he gives you the order, you hand him the money."
Exactly.
And you tell him this is his tip. Okay?
Yeah.
All staged, no excitement, nobody in the place, even the employees looked like they were thrilled that he was in there. This was all staged. And then Joe went off script. He looks up at the menu board, you know, what you got anything for drinks? And we have, you know, this or this or milkshakes. I want a milkshake. And they, you know, well, you know, what can we get you? Black and white. Now, I don't know. Is that chocolate and vanilla together?
Black and white is a cookie.
Well, he ordered a milkshake, black and white. Now, I don't, you know, on the East Coast, I don't know what that means.
I would only think milkshakes could be anything. There could be a scoop of chocolate with vanilla. Who knows?
Yeah,
but what was funny about that, did you hear the part where he was complaining that a little kid about 7 years old was giving him the finger?
Happens all the time, he said. You know, it happens all the time. Yeah, Joe, it happens all the time because the damn kids are hungry. And their parents can't afford to go to the bodega and buy food.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, no joke. You know, 7-year-old kid flipping me the bird. Well, it's not just the 7-year-old, Joe.
Well, how you see him on the campaign trail is how he is. How you saw him at the State of the Union address or whatever that was that he gave. That was a man hopped up on amphetamines.
Right. Right. When he walks around on these campaign things, he can barely move. He's shuffling his feet. His arms don't move. He has to turn his whole body to look from one side to the other.
Right.
You know, he's mumbling, he's stumbling, he's stammering. He can't get his thoughts together. And his uncle was eaten by a cannibal.
Yes.
You know,
well, that can go in, you know, in his legacy. I'm the only president, and I do not. I have never called him President Biden. He's the only one in the annals of history that can say, my uncle was eaten by a cannibal. Even though it's not true, he can say it.
How many people out there, just a rhetorical question, how many people out there are related to somebody that was eaten by cannibals? I mean, I suppose there are a few shirt-tailed descendants of the Donner Party and maybe a couple of people who had a relative that went over, to Jeffrey Dahmer's for dinner. But, I mean, good Lord, we had an air base in New Guinea. That's the air base his uncle took off from. As
exactly.
A passenger, not a pilot.
Exactly.
You know,
and these records are ironclad, folks, because these are kept by the military. They knew where all their people were deployed.
I mean, yes, there have been cannibals in New Guinea. Yes, I understand that is true. But they're in the jungles of New Guinea.
Right.
They're not working at the airport. And as far as I know, and unlike Joe, apparently I have no firsthand family knowledge of cannibals, but I'm not really sure they're scavengers.
No, I think they deliberately kill to eat.
they like their meat fresh.
Yeah.
You know? They're not scavengers. I mean, let's say the plane went down into the jungle. It didn't. It crashed into the ocean. But let's say it went into the jungle. They're not interested in leftovers.
They want fresh kill, right?
You know? But of course, Joe's uncle
was eaten. This country has gone mad. I mean, right before we got on, I was watching the latest about Columbia University in New York. And these people that are protesting, these pro-Hamas people, Craig, it was really getting me angry.
I know.
Why the hell don't they pepper spray these mobs? Ship them, you know, they think these people are so wonderful. Why don't they ship them over there?
Let them
see how good it is here.
I have a better idea.
What?
dip them to New Guinea. With that, we've run out of time for tonight's show, folks.
Yes, we have. So I will say nighty-night, folks.
Folks, have yourselves a great weekend. We'll catch up with you again on Monday. Bye-bye.